Yes, and would you believe it, we're on to episode 10 of the Haven Rugby League Fans podcast. We started off a few months ago. Numbers are picking up all the time. Our last podcast, which was with Stan Martin just over a week ago, numbers are getting up well over 100 now. So we must be doing something right, and people are obviously finding it worthwhile tuning in and listening to what our guests have to say. So for episode 10, we welcome along Haven assistant coach, Jonty Gawley. Welcome along, Jonty.
Hi, Dave. All right. So, yeah. Where are you all right, mother?
Yeah. And also joining us once again, partner in crime from Greater Manchester, is Paul Stubbs.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah, great. Hi, yeah. Okay, so as I say, the podcast has been increasing in popularity. You get more people listening. And all I would say at the outset is it is the Haven fans. It's a chance for Haven fans to come and join in, ask questions, have the say. So if there's anybody listening to this today who wants to join into a future podcast, just give us an email. Drop us an email at trustinhaven@gmail.com and we'll try and work into a future podcast. So anyway, down to business. And welcome along, Jonty. Thanks for devoting some time to join in with us today. How's lockdown been for you? How's 2020 been for you? What's your?
It's the big scheme of things. It's a terrible thing that's happened. But when things like this happen, you've just got to get on with it, haven't you? I was off work for quite a bit. I'm back in full time now, so my dog's got some pile of walking for me. I was exercising at the start, so yeah, you just
that's right. I think that's the case for a lot of people, really. Yeah,
of course it is. I mean, we had a house full at the start. My eldest daughter, she's worked right through. My youngest daughter, she was off. She worked in the nursery, so she was off. And my wife was, she was at work. Then she was part time, like working from home. Then she was furloughed. So we've had a house full, like everybody else has.
That's right. Anyway, right. So as I say, just going to quiz you now, ask you a few questions. Hopefully, nothing too
be nice, mate.
Nice. One of us. But anyway, you're a Maryport lad. Maryport and Whitehaven. There've always been big links between Whitehaven Rugby League and Maryport. Been some top players from Maryport. Played for Whitehaven over the year, but your career path was perhaps slightly different. You started off at Ellenborough with that really good side, just coached by Gary Murdoch.
Yeah, well, I'll give you the crack, Dave. I'm actually a Flimby lad, believe it or not. I've been more than half my life in Maryport now, but I was born and bred in Flimby. I started rugby. We didn't start back then in them days till like under 13 or something. So I think it was the last year under 13. So I actually started, my first game of rugby ever was at Glasson Rangers. We had like three seasons of youth at Glasson Rangers and then went to Ellenborough under 17s. It was Joe Sampson and Michael Easterbrook coaches at Glasson. And then Dave Martin, ex-Whitehaven man. Dave took us at Ellenborough under 17s for 2 years and under 19s for 2 years. So going from when we were 13 and starting and getting whooped by everybody, we ended up under 19s with Dave winning everything. So we had a great team, great set of lads, and things progressed from there. But during that as well, under 17s, we'd been a Flimby lad. I was playing open edge on the Saturday for Flimby, for Kevin Gartland was coach at the time, Kebsy.
Oh, yeah.
Sunders was playing for Ellenborough under 17s or 19s. So when 19s finished, I had one season at Flimby, and then all my mates were obviously playing for Elba, so I went, there was two or three of us went through to Elmborough, and then that was Kebsy again. Kebsy moved from Flimby to Elmborough. That started, and then I signed for Workington in 93 season, was it end of 93, something like that.
That was a time when Workington were really in the...
When I signed was just the year after they got beat by Featherston in at the Old Trafford final, and it was a no-brainer for me. I always wanted to play the highest you can, and because Workington come knocking the year before, but I was enjoying it that much at Ellenborough. it was a young lad and that with your mates and a beer after the match and all that crack, and we were successful at the time. So when they come for us again, I thought, no, time's right. I wasn't getting in the county side because the lad Toddy, Richard Todd, the little bugger, he kept us at the county side. So I thought, well, I might as well go pro. So I had a great time at work. Like you say, everything was buzzing. The amateur game was great at the time. Whitehaven had a good side. And it was just a good time for rugby league in Cumbria, I think.
Absolutely.
In West Cumbria, especially. So I don't get a great one bit. Signing professional, it was a brilliant time.
So, did you play in the first Super League season? Were you part of the town?
Well, I was. I'm even older than that, Dave. I was in the Stones beat the championship when the town got promoted from the third division to the second division to then what was the top.
Yeah, they played in the top league. That's right.
Yeah, so I was in the. I'm moving Northern Super League, mate. A lot of folks say that, but no, I didn't play Super League. I was the year before. So it was good times. You're playing against top teams and
that's
top
right.
players, national players. It was brilliant there.
That's right, yeah. There has been some, during lockdown, there's been some old Sky footage on, and I think you featured in one of the games there. Was it Hull?
Warrington. It was funny at the time because another ex-wife of man, Kurt Sorensen, was coaching us. And the week before we went to Warrington, we played St. Helens at home and we were absolutely hammered. And I'll never forget the headline on the back of the News and Star on the Monday night. The score was 66-22, we got beat. And the headline was Route 66 on the back of the paper. So we went training and Kurt did a few harsh words to say training that week. And we trained really hard and we went down and played on Sky and turned Warrington over.
Yeah,
it's just the consistency at that level when you know what I mean. It's tough at any level, but at that level you've got to be like full on, like constantly all the time. And
yeah,
little squads, not any injuries, and your top players are out. Where other teams like your Warringtons and St. Helens, they fetch another superstar in, can't they? But your Workings and Whitehaven, you can't really, can you?
That's right. So some really good lessons learned during that time, I suppose. Really, So obviously, career moves on. Yeah, as with most players, get into coaching at some point. So, what was your sort of route into coaching? What was your first coaching?
Well, at the time, I think I signed for 4 years. We're working, but my last season was the first Super League season. But I didn't play. My ankle was knackered, and I didn't play for about 2 or 3 years. But at the time, Gary Murdoch took over at Ellenborough from Kebsey. And like I say, they were on my mates. So I sort of went and helped Gary out. When Gary was still playing at the time, player coaching, when Gary was on the field, I was doing the sideline stuff. And that was when we had the good run, the beat. Was it that went to Unslet and Edenline beat Unslet? Or Bramley, sorry. And then we played Unslet at Down Park and beat them. And then we ended up going to Hull and getting walloped at Hull in the fourth round or something like that. But it was the first year ever that the amateur side had beat 2 professional sides in 1 year. Yeah, so
quite an achievement.
All good times. So yeah. And then it got on when Gary, a couple of lads signed, Stuart Halls and that, and Ryan Charters, Young Demps, they'd all signed for work. And Gary was enticed to put program coaching. So it was a natural progression for me to take over at Ellenborough, to be fair. And at the time, it was a team that was breaking up. And We had a couple of decent seasons, but it was the game really, as all around here, was only really Wathbrow thriving at the time. They were coming up. They were sort of taking over from Elbert at the time. So if we were losing teams, all the Carlisle teams went. Everybody who had second teams would go on. So I enjoyed my time at Elbert. Don't get us wrong, it was great. And it got us into coaching. And like you said, during my pro career, and even my amateurs, going back to, like, you pick someone up off every coach you play under. And everybody from, like you say, Joe Sampson and Mike Easterbrook at Glasson, and you got Dave at Ellenborough and at Kebsey, Gaz. It was a good thing for me. So I started coaching. It was a different thing when you go and train and there's only 5 turning up, you know what I mean? So you can't do any coaching, but you just got to get on with it and keep the team together. And that's when you learn how hard it is to run a rugby side when things aren't going great. But
yeah,
we're doing all right. And I got, it was Charlo, actually, me and Charlo, done the county squad together. I got picked to coach the county with Gaz.
Yeah.
And then
you
I
and
went
Charlo, You and Charlo go back a long way then, really, yeah.
So I was doing, I think I'd done the county for 3 years, and at the time, you couldn't coach, you could only sort of coach one rep team. And at the time, I got picked with Joel Eaton and Roger Blair seniors, and I got picked the coach of the Great Britain under 21, so I couldn't carry on with the county as well.
Yeah.
So that was a great honour. That it was brilliant. A brilliant time. Unfortunately, we didn't have any matches abroad, but it was down the furthest I went was Portsmouth, but it was still great times, and a lot of lads went on from them 2 or 3 seasons at that under 21s to play pro, and you see them now and again. You just make mates, don't you? Everything you
that's
do,
right.
You just make life for the rugby, like so. Yeah, that's basically how my amateur career went, and then the Cumbria Storm started. Well, it was working actually. We'd done an extended academy. It was Gary Mount who got us down to work.
Yeah.
When Charlo and Oggy were doing the first team, I was sort of doing this scholarship thing at under 16s. Then we got one for under 18s. So I'd done that for 2 or 3 years. Then obviously the amalgamation with the youth regarding the area, it was the Cumbria Storm. With the rugby league could have done the 3 areas, didn't the Cumbria, Midlands and North East.
That's right.
Yeah. So Stuart Wilkinson come up and took the Cumbrian side. So each pro club were asked to provide a coach for that. So I was lucky enough to go and coach on that programme. I thought it was a great thing for the area. And I'm not going to get into politics, but if that you got like Brandon Moen, I was playing full time at Halifax, and Will Mayer, who got the Super League, and there's others there. Like TV's made a great career out of it. Andy Dawson's at work now. So you know, Shane Tall, you've got lads at JJ, John Johnson's at all in Super League. So,
yeah,
I'm thinking, don't get me wrong, some of them lads would have still have made it, and not, you know, doubt they would have done. But if that had been going on, how many more lads could we have produced?
For ourselves,
and for a higher level. So, I'm looking at why it's still not there, but it was to me as a coach to coach them lads in that environment, which Stuart was. Stuart's a level 4 coach. I think there's only 3 or 4 in the country, and Stuart's one of them. And he's been coaching Great Britain. Like he was one of the coaches who went to Australia with the academy, when he did the Super League academy.
He did.
Yours is in their own backyard. So if you're getting fellas like that teaching you stuff, I learned a hell of a lot.
You couldn't,
Stuart,
yeah. Couldn't have a better grounding, really. Yeah. So yeah. So you were obviously with town, but when Charlo. Yeah. Took over as head coach, that you really got into coaching first team football.
Because I'm big mate with Oggy, you know. I still talk about Martin now, Martin Ogilvie, yeah. and Oggy and Gaz were coaching at the time, and Gary Mounty was another Maryport lad, another ex-Whitehaven lad. He was on helping with the youth structure at working, but when this Cumbria Academy came up, obviously I was affiliated with them through working, so I wasn't doing any coaching at working at the time. I was just on the Cumbria Academy, yeah? And it was during that, because at that level, you've got to do your level 3 coaching course. So when I went on that, there was a lot of Super League lads on it, and lads who was wanting to get into coaching, just finishing the career. But Phil Vavers was on it. That's when I first met Phil on the level 3 coaching course. He had to do a refresher. He'd already done everything years ago, but because they were like affiliated till this is their coaching badge, UKCC, whatever it was, Phil had to do it all again. So I sort of got pally with Phil on that, actually. So when Phil got the working job, he gives a ring and asks if I would be interested. And that's when I got into like the pro game sort of coaching, you know what I mean? I was chuffed that Phil rang us, actually. And it was, again, at the club that I loved playing at working. So it was a natural progression for me to, and to go with somebody like Phil under his wing, you know what I mean? He's been there and done it, playing and coaching. So,
yeah.
After being with Stuart, and then that's how you're coaching.
Two really good mentors then, eh?
Getting into the program with Phil, it was good again, another level for me again. So, yeah. Yeah, I've had some good mentors.
So a continual learning curve, really, then, eh? You wouldn't want to.
It still is, David.
Yeah. So, I said there before about coaching. You used to be turned up with a bag of balls twice a week, but that's way back in the past now. How demanding is pro coaching?
Compared to what it was, when I first started playing rugby and compared to what it is now, you would think you were on another planet. It's totally, totally different. I signed for work. This is how bad, I wouldn't say how bad it was, but this is what it was like.
Yeah.
When I was 19 and 20 and 21, when I signed for work, nobody ever taught me how to tackle. Nobody ever taught, I was a player, a dummy half. Nobody ever shown me how to play that position, how to pass a ball off the deck, how to engage markers, anything like that, nothing. All we got was, from an age of 13, you had a rugby ball in your hands constantly. So it was a natural thing that you got used to holding that ball. And it was just, you went training through summer when you were pre-season, it was a winter game, you went summer nights, all you done was play touch for like an hour and a half. So the natural things in the game, you started picking up on that. And you didn't realise you were doing it, but it just sort of come natural to you how to play the game. And like the coaches would like point you in the right direction, but even they've just coached off the back of playing. They've never been taught how to coach, if you know what I mean? Yeah, all the technicalities. Yeah. So now you go to training.
Yeah.
And if I'd said to the lads that like working a white event, all we're going to do tonight is want to run the roads because it's dark and we've got nowhere to turn. There's no facilities. All you do in winter is just run. That's all we ever done for the winter was run. We were quite distinct. And that's why we won everything with Elmer at the time. Because I don't know if you've heard of the back of our steps. People come on there and the fittest I've ever been, even in the pro when I signed for work and that, the fittest I've ever been was that season or two before I signed. Because all we done with Dave Martin and Kebsey was get fit. And that win your games. But you go training now and the play these kids, the lads who's in the mid-20s now, they play for 20 years. You know what I mean? They've been coached for 20 years by coaches like myself who's like been taught how to coach. The little, every little second of the game you coached. And to me, it's like you go to your coaching and a lot of them are like...
So does that mean
itself, you know what I mean? They've been taught that much now. The coaches themselves when they're still playing. And
so
we're getting questioned, Dave, and ask them why we're doing this, and what we're doing this for. But if we'd done that 20 years ago, you'd have been kicked up backside.
So in some ways it makes coaching easier, but in another sense it makes it so much more demanding.
Yeah. It's challenging, it is challenging, which is good because you've got to be challenged. If you just went along in life coaching and nobody asked the question, you could be the worst coach in the world and nobody's going to be telling you. But now you've got to be on your toes all the time because lads are that clued up with the technicalities of the game.
Yeah.
You've got to know what you're doing because if you're doing some of the training, they will pick up that you don't know what you're doing if you don't know. You know what I mean? You've got to be, it's good. It's good that way because like you say, you've got to know why you're doing something. Why are we doing this for? Well, just because you said we're doing this because of the weekend, we got this wrong. So that's why we're doing it. Once over you were doing it because you were taught to do it and you didn't ask questions, but it's different now. It's good. It's good that the technical side of the game is like that, but I still think we overcomplicate the game of rugby. I still do. I've still got that mentality, that philosophy of you've got to give from one end of the field to the other to score a try and you've got to stop the opposition doing the same. So if you run hard and tackle hard, and I know what you say, all the cliches and that, but that to me
still applies.
I do them things first. As a rugby team, you've got to be tough, you've got to be run strong, you've got to tackle hard, you've got to do them things first. And all these little technicalities that they're getting taught now, how to find space, where to kick to, how to pass, and they all come into it on the back of getting a good foundation in your game.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, technically things have moved on. And as I say, that's the way just about everything in life is. Things evolve and move on. Just interested to get your view. As I say, you usually turn up twice a week and have a game of touch. Certainly at professional level, and maybe even at quite a high standard in the community game, twice a week isn't really going to get you anywhere in terms of preparation. So what's your sort of... during the season, during game time, what's your sort of time commitment that's required, Jonty?
Well, it's a case of like getting a good balance, Dave. You know what I mean? And if I've been in with coaches as an assistant and like a younger coach, and if you get lads need a happy balance with life and rugby and work and stuff, so With Charlo, and obviously Scott Mack and Barry Quayle, we had a good... Well, Phil was the same at work. In Phil Beavers, you've only got so much time because a lot of, I work shifts myself. There's a lot of these lads miss training and stuff, but nowadays they all go up to the gym and that anyhow. You know, the tight, most of them do keep themselves right anyhow. But we with Phil at work, it was pre-season was 3 times a week, and it could have been 2 nights on a Saturday morning, and maybe get. They would give their own weights program to do, and we'd set off in the gym and they'd come, and you'd have an hour in the gym and then an hour on the field of pre-season. But when the season was on, it was Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday morning, and all Saturday morning was with the captain's own. And so it's hard in when you're playing, especially in the championship, when you're going against teams that are full-time,
you've
got 2 or 3 full-time teams in there. It's hard to get what you want into lads when an hour and a half. But if you go over that, As much as they love rugby, and the attention span is hard to keep if you're going a long time. And so, like last year when we won the league, pre-season we trained 3 times, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And it was, the lads were saying it was the hardest pre-season they've had for years at Whitehaven. But it paid dividends at the back end of the season.
Absolutely. You know what
I mean? We were busted, but we were that fit. We were... Sometimes we defend our completions were down to 50% and some halves of the games, but we were defending that well and wanted to defend that well for each other, and we were that fit. Even though we're down to 50%, we could handle the defensive side of it. So the pre-season paid off, but when the season was on, it's same crack. It's a Wednesday, Friday. It's just we have a recovery session on a Monday, which is basically they can go down the gym, do a few light weights. Or we've got the hydro pool up at the St. Benedict School. They'll go there and just get in the pool and do some stretching and stuff like that. So, and the Wednesday, it's just knock 10 bells out of each other again. And the Friday, it's a bit of ball work. So, and you're back into the Sunday. So, it isn't a great deal of time, Dave, to be fair.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the last thing we want to do is, if they're going on a Monday, they're there on a Wednesday, they're there on a Friday. If you're playing away and it's overnight, stay at the weekend. We've only got the Tuesday, Thursday with the family, and if we fetch him in another day and the work shifts and they don't, it's getting that balance right with rugby and life and work.
Striking a balance. Yeah, so as I say, you've already touched on last season, and that's something I was going to go on. As I say, Charlo was appointed. He came and asked you to get on board. When you took the job, did you think you would achieve what the way it actually turned out?
No. Me,
absolutely amazing.
Have you got time to give you the crack what I would come about? You know?
Go on, yeah, go on.
Well, I'd parted ways with working, which I'm not going to go into, but that's a tale for another day. So I'd had like a full summer off from rugby. And me and my missus, we were getting too much drink and we were going out, enjoying life, basically, away from rugby. Not missing it. And we were actually in Benidorm. Oggy was with his Marty, and we went with the wives. I think it was 8 or 10 of us went to Benidorm for a week. And Oggy just got his phone. He didn't say anything. He just gave us his phone. And I read it. It was off Charlo. He said, mate, I understand you're in Benidorm. He says, John, is with you in this? He says, aye. Show him this, and he was basically asking if I would be interested in coaching at Whitehaven with Gazza. And to be fair, I was honoured that he asked us, but in one respect, I'm here sitting in Benidorm having a summer of my life, you know what I mean? I've been involved in rugby for years and I had some time off and I was properly enjoying it. And next thing, Gazza's given us his text, they were wanting to help him at Whitehaven. And at the time, I think, they were really wanting. And then I thought about it, and I come home and I had a crack with the missus off for a week or two, and a couple of conversations with Gaz on the phone, and he's very persuasive, he's Gaz, and he got us, but I'm glad I did.
Glad to have you on board. You've obviously brought a lot to the coaching team at Whitehaven, John D.
Cheers, Dave. And at the time, we talked about just going back to what he'd done at Workington with Oggy, and going back to how he was at Carlisle, with a lot of locally based lads and a couple of good overseas. And that's when working at the best. We'd all the best local young lads, one or two travellers, great of a season, like Jimmy Pickering and Phil McKenzie, Mark Mulligan, and him and Whitehaven were the very best. They had likes of Howard and Chairman, lads like that, but they had Leroy and
yeah, Fats, that's right,
lads like that. So you've got to get, you've got to be local, especially, you know what you're like in West Cumberland, mate, we're on a limb. So you've got to get that blend of
the right balance,
yeah, out of the lads you've got, yeah, locally, which, and don't get me wrong, I've coached with a lot of the lads who were at Whitehaven anyhow, because they've all been at working. So it was a no-brainer. I loved it. I loved it there. And when Gaz said, all we wanted to do was get a side together, a locally based side, yeah, and survive, basically. If we made six spots for the playoffs, we would have been happy. But it started, yeah, and it started. It kept on going. And it's like, what's happening here, yeah, boys? You know what I mean? But
brilliant. Yeah. Can I just
chip in 1 minute? Can I ask you a question, Jonty? Now, you can answer this as much whether you want to. If you don't want to, then you talked very highly of when you were at Workington.
Yeah.
And things like that, and you've just said you left under a bit of a whatever.
Yeah.
How does it feel to you when we go to Workington, or Workington come to us and we beat them? How do you feel?
Yeah.
Because I know how Dennis Law felt when he sent Man United down.
Yeah, I know. I'll always, Workington's, it's part of us, you know what I mean? I'm still a Workington fan. I'm mates with a lot of the coaches there, the players, and It's a big part of my life is working, but it was at the time, and it wasn't the club. I didn't fall out with Working Town at the time, but when I went back to coach there, Good Friday was one of the best feelings I've ever had as a coach. Good Friday, it was like,
it's brilliant, wasn't it?
I am totally happy with that. When we went to town with the side, because obviously town had spent big that year, and we've just gone local. We just stopped local at Whitehaven. Town spent big, Newcastle spent big. There's a couple of other teams there, but so we luckily to finish sixth if we were happy. Yeah, that would have been us happy at sixth position. But when he got round to going to work it on Good Friday, I said, when we and Charlo stood at the new scoreboard end, and that was then to me. Yeah. Hold on a minute, we've got somebody here. We've got a squad that can go all the way, you know. And it was good that day. It was good, but I'm not the type of person that holds grudges and stuff like that. So it's working still a big part of my life, and it also will be. I still go back to working town gear. I don't want to walk with dogs and that. But yeah, it's. I'm not going
to
say.
Sorry to put you on that on the thing
there. Yeah. So as I say, 2019, absolutely amazing season, and as I say, all credit to yourself and the playing squad for all you achieved. As I say. At the start of the season, you know, playoffs was probably about all we could expect. So to do that was overachievement on a massive scale. So well done. So anyway, 2020 was going to be difficult. We managed to get a few games in. Do you feel the coaching staff learned or picked up some valuable learning points from 2020?
For a lot of clubs, and I think the RFL made the right decision to cut the season short, because clubs were rating under with money with the COVID testing and such like that. Absolutely. 2 or 3 grand a week. So COVID for Whitehaven, and don't take this wrong way, it was a blessing for Whitehaven Rugby League that the season was cut short, because we knew after them 5 or 6 games, even though a few games were close, we should have possibly come away with a win at Brendan. We run witness all the way. But the game's at home, when you should be, we put ourselves under pressure against teams we should be beating. And like when we play in London and Widnes, oh yeah, lads, there's no pressure there. But that, there's no pressure as a coach, as in any game. But I think that's what the lads were feeling. So we've realised now, and that's obviously the release of Ryan King yesterday. Ryan's just roughly the start of 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 players we're getting in.
Brilliant.
In strengthened positions to see us through them games, like your Swinton game, like your Dewsbury game, yeah, the cup, where we would finish them off. We realise as coaches, as a coaching
staff. Turn them into wins next year.
Yeah, hopefully, dear, yeah.
So I say, looking forward to 2021, have you sat down and talked with Charlo and the coaching staff about your plans going forward?
Yeah, mainly we had a couple of meetings with Mark Stamp and Gary Elbert, me and Gaz, and we looked at the players we're targeting, and they've worked tirelessly. Mark Stamp and a couple of the lads on the board have worked tirelessly. Obviously, he's looking for the right person the lads who's wanting to come for the right reasons, not for money, and they want to prove themselves. And if it's a Sam Hobbs type effect, if they come for the season and move on, great, because that means they've helped White even if they're moving up. So, yeah, they have worked really hard. Hopefully, they give me and Gaz and Scott and Barry the right lads in the squad to kick on in 2021.
So, yeah. So, as I say, Case, so watch these spaces over the next few weeks and months. Are you looking to get back into training anytime soon, or will you be leaving?
If we had a meeting last week, and it'll be mid-November, third week in November again, if given the green light.
Yeah, brilliant. So, yeah, okay then. Well, as I say, we're starting to get towards the end of our time here, Johnny. So, it's been absolutely brilliant, and you made some really good comments and some interesting points from the past. So, just any message to the fans for the future?
No, I think they've just got to try and stick with me and Charlo. I know that season last year was brilliant, and we did overachieve, really, didn't we? What everybody was expecting, absolutely, with the amount of money we didn't spend. And the squad we had, and compared to everybody else. So it just shows what you can do with it. When you get together and stick together as a team, and that's as a club, and even the supporters were great last year. You know what I mean? We're getting 1,000 at home, and you're going away, and you hear them singing. So all we need from the supporters is just the same again in 2021, and just stick with us. Just carry on trying to do what we're doing locally and getting some good quality travellers and overseas in.
That's right.
And do a best camp away, isn't it?
Brilliant, yeah. I say you're obviously doing lots of things right, and I'm sure the fans will take ourselves and all the fans, for that matter, will take great encouragement from that. So yeah, so thanks very much for joining us, Jonty. It's been great speaking to you, and we'll look forward to maybe catching up with you with a future podcast. Okay then, thanks very much, Jonty. Bye for now.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Dubai. Cheers, my lad.
Cheers, Jonty.
Cheers out. And it's back with part two of episode 10 of the Haven Rugby League Fans Podcast. And a big thank you to Jonty Gawley. Really interesting piece there with some insights into modern day coaching, and also a little bit of hint to some signings to come, Paul.
Yeah, sounds quite interesting and quite intriguing, really. Nice to hear from him. I just felt a bit guilty about asking him the question regarding how he felt when we beat Workington last year. And he was quite coy about it, I must admit. But obviously, he don't want to upset anybody. So we'll leave it at that, shall we?
Yeah. So as I say, we're on episode 10 of the podcast. Our viewing numbers, we don't want viewers, we just want
listeners.
We want listeners, don't we? The listening figures are going up and up. We've so more or less doubled our weekly listeners. So that's good. And we look to carry this on over the next few weeks, get a few more people in from the current squad, but also do some retro stuff, go back and speak to coaches and players from the bygone era, so which are proven very popular. What I would say is that the podcast, the Haven Rugby League Fans Podcast, for fans. Fans are more than welcome to get involved. So if you feel you've someone to say and you want to join us, and one or two people already have, and we have some more coming on over the next couple of weeks. But if you want to come in and have your say, as a burning issue you want to share with us, we'd love to have you on board in a future podcast. So if that's you, get in touch with us at our email address, which is trustinhaven@gmail.com. Podcasts can be found on our website, which is trustinhaven.com, and you can also follow us on our social media Facebook page, and on follow us on our Twitter page. So yeah, look forward to hearing from people, Paul. But just to wrap up this podcast, just one or two matters around the trust to go over. And I think you wanted to say something about the Last Fan Standing competition.
Yeah, at the moment, as you will appreciate with what's gone on with Hull and Salford and St Helens now, although at the time of going or the time of recording this, the guy at St Helens who tested positive has now been tested negative. It's in a bit of an abeyance. Unfortunately, we don't know what's going to happen and what the fix is going to be. We've got another 2 weeks before we need to make a decision, and that'll give us a week for anybody who wants to enter it. But at the moment, like I say, we're a bit on a knife edge. If it happens again and somebody gets tested positive and it's another 2, 3, 4 games that have got to be rearranged, unfortunately, it looks like we might have to shelve the last fan standing. Now, unfortunately, just to go on from that, just so people have got an insight into this, this is our only fundraiser that we have at the moment. And all the memberships that comes in, that goes towards paying for the website, also goes towards paying for the video site, which is not cheap, believe me. That's the way that's we right. do it.
People wouldn't believe if we
told them.
The bill for the server space we have to buy to run the videos, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. So it's a bit of a big hole in the trust finances. So if we do run it, I hope a lot of people do get involved this time.
Yeah.
If not, we are going to run it again next year. We're building up to running it next year. So fingers crossed we'll get one in.
The plan,
if we don't, yeah. then...
The plan at the moment, Paul, is just so as people are aware, is that we have come up with a set of 10 fixtures. If you work them back from the last set of Super League fixtures, which is scheduled to take place in November, the start date we have for the 10 weeks fixtures for the last fan standing is the fixtures commencing the week, the 11th of September, Paul, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I'm just double-checking, Dave. It is Friday. It's not the week commencing. They're actually the games.
The games.
So it's Friday the 11th.
Yeah.
It's Friday the 25th, Wednesday the 30th, Friday the 9th, 14th, 23rd, 26th, 30th, 6th. And I think we finish on the 9th of November, Dave. That gives us 1 week.
That's the end of the regular season, yeah.
The 13th, actually, the end of the regular season.
Right, now, right.
Obviously, they've got to fit these games in that they've had postponed now. So where we'll end up with that, I don't know.
I think the rules as are written down and are on the entry form and on the web page means that we can go ahead and we can cater for teams that don't actually play in the week the schedule do for whatever reason. And as I say, there are big concerns about games being called off because of positive tests. But I think the rules for last fan standing do mean we can deal with that, and we will run it for 10 weeks, and whatever is left at the end of the 10 weeks or sooner will be the winners of the last fan standing 2020.
Yeah, you're quite right, Dave. The ruling stands that if that game isn't played on that date, then you progress and you've put win, lose, whatever, then you auto to the following week.
That's right. That's right.
You don't get knocked out because the team hasn't played. You actually.
So I say Friday the 11th of September it kicks off. The selections can be made online at trustinhaven.com. We'd encourage people to do that in this pandemic troubled times. It makes things a lot easier. However, there will be PDF forms available online for people who want to complete that and send them back to us via email. So look out for communications from the Trust over the next couple of weeks, and hopefully we'll get people signing up for Last Fan Standing, and it'll create a little bit of interest over the remainder of the Super League season. So we'll see how that one goes. Very good, Paul. Thanks for that. Thanks for updating us on that. As I say, it's the end of episode 10. So, like I say, I'd just like to thank Paul and Jonty for joining us. As I say, if you have something you want to say, email us at trustinhaven@gmail.com, and we look forward to seeing you, or speaking with you, listening in, and on our future podcast. So thanks for now. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, cheers, Dave. I'll speak to you soon. Stay safe, everybody up there.
Yeah, and you in Manchester. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for now.